ambush in the Oval Office. Hello, this is a special episode of Beyond Barbarossa, the podcast usually about the Eastern Front of World War II. And this is a different kind of episode. I know you don't expect this kind of content from me, and some of you may deeply disagree with me, but that is absolutely your right. I just cannot ignore this issue anymore, not without betraying the founding spirit of this podcast, to explain and illuminate the reality of the Eastern Front of World War II, and show how it affects the world we live in today. I'm Scott Burry, still in the Redbeard studio on traditional Anishinaabeg Algonquin territory, also called Ottawa, Canada. And my apologies if there's some background noise going on right now. I really didn't have a whole lot of time to prepare this episode. So what is this episode about? What makes it special? Well, as I record this, it was yesterday that the President of Ukraine visited the Oval Office of the President of the United States. Also attending were the Vice President, U.S. Cabinet Secretaries, and members of the news media, including one from TASS, the Russian state-controlled news agency. You've doubtlessly heard the audio or seen the video from that meeting in the Oval Office, which looked to me like a willfully uninformed grandfather scolding his grandson for being ungrateful about losing his inheritance. I have never seen a political event like this, and I'm an old geezer. I thought it was intended to be a celebration, or at least a marking, of two countries signing an agreement. Then it decayed into a screaming match. Well, it wasn't really a match, because only one party, that is, American President Donald Trump, he was the only one who was doing the screaming. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was trying to explain his country's reality in measured tones. He appeared throughout to be very professional. Many commenters have spoken about this exchange. They've argued about it at great length, so I won't repeat the details. Except for one, Trump's closing statement, "This will make great television." I can agree with that. I can also agree with Canadian journalist Janice McGregor. You had to expect me to work in some Canadian content. She said yesterday that you have to view this whole debacle as a reality television show. And if you do that, you'll understand how Trump is more concerned about how he will look on television than he is about foreign policy. One more thing about the content of the meeting. The focus on Zelensky's choice in clothing underscores the shallowness of the American opposition to him. Now, why am I making this episode? I know, as I said, you don't expect to hear this kind of content on this podcast. So here are my reasons. First, this is about Ukraine, and much of the action on the Eastern Front during World War II happened on Ukrainian territory from the beginning of the war in 1941 through 1944, when the action moved into other countries. And the last several episodes have focused on what was happening in Ukraine throughout 1943 and into the beginning of 1944. Second reason, the history of what happened on the Eastern Front and in all of World War II laid the structure of the world we live in today. It's a structure that is now crumbling. The world is changing, as my friend and fellow podcaster Chris Steps Andersons of the Eastern Border Podcast has said. Third reason, I'm Canadian, in case you didn't know. I think I've mentioned it a few times. Anyway, I am Canadian, and in the last several months, Donald Trump has demonstrated in word and in deed that he is no more a friend of Canada than he is of Ukraine. And fourth, something that's been nagging at me for a while. My podcast may seem to favor Russia, but it does not. Russia has dominated Ukraine for centuries, and it's never been a healthy relationship for Ukraine. Whether it was the Russian Empire, the USSR, or today's Russian state, it has always been an oppressor. It has tried to erase Ukrainian culture and has murdered millions. So while I describe the progress and events of the Second World War, I want to clarify, neither the Nazis nor the Soviets were good guys. The biggest reason for this episode, though, is that I cannot tolerate leaders who tell lies when the truth is plain before us and them. So now that I've established why I'm doing this, I want to set out a few relevant truths. First, Ukraine did not start the current war. Russia did. In 2014, so 11 years ago, when it seized Ukraine, when it seized Crimea and invaded the Donbass. Then, 3 years ago, on 24 February 2022, Russia launched its full-scale invasion, striking toward the capital of Kyiv and eventually occupying 20% of Ukrainian land. It has been beaten back in some areas, has ground forward in others, but largely, since those opening days, Russia has not been able to make much of a difference, except for murdering civilians and children. Russia has, throughout this conflict, been committing war crimes, targeting and killing civilians, kidnapping children, executing prisoners of war, destroying cultural artifacts, and more. Here's another truth. Russia is right now conducting a hidden war on the West, with sabotage in the Baltic Sea, probable attacks in Poland, Germany, and the UK, where factories and warehouses have gone up in flames. Assassination plots against Western industrial leaders like the president of Rheinmetall. Interference in elections in Georgia, Romania, Poland, Germany, the United States, yes, the United States, and in Canada. And continuing cyber attacks across the West. These are all documented. Here's another truth. Trump has been vocally supportive of Russia and Putin for a long time. Remember his statement during his first presidential term? Wouldn't it be great if we were friends with Russia? Through the last election campaign, just last year, Trump and his toadies, I mean supporters and spin doctors, repeatedly scoffed at Ukraine. J.D. Vance, his vice president, or then potential vice president, famously said that he didn't care what happened to Ukraine. Trump then called Zelensky the greatest salesman in the world for receiving billions of dollars in aid, implying that the Ukrainian president had somehow tricked or cheated the U.S. Trump called Biden stupid for donating aid, even though the money spent went largely to U.S. companies. So that brings us up to yesterday. What precipitated the screaming match in the Oval Office? And as I repeat, only Trump was raising his voice. And Zelensky was professional the whole way through. In fact, once Trump started yelling, Zelensky's expression just said, "Get me out of here as fast as possible." Anyway, the issue that supposedly brought the Ukrainian president to Washington was the deal for Ukrainian rare earth and other critical minerals, which actually aren't all that rare. And maybe someone should explain that to Trump. Someone should also tell him that Greenland really isn't green. The topper has to be, well, there are two, and I don't know which is more telling, when Trump said that Ukraine started the war or when he called Zelensky a dictator. both are patently false. Where we're going. When we put all this together, we can see maybe not a pattern, but at least a direction. Trump has been anti-Ukraine since the beginning of the current war. His calls for an immediate ceasefire that would freeze the front lines where they are only favors Russia. And Trump has not once criticized Putin, nor has he acknowledged that Russia started the war. Here's another thing to think about. Trump's territorial ambitions for the United States. He wants Greenland, the Panama Canal, and Canada. He has persisted in his unfunny joke about Canada becoming the 51st state to the point where nobody here thinks it's funny anymore. It wasn't funny from the very beginning. But repeating it doesn't make it easier. Trump also recently defined what he means by make America great again, a return to the period between 1890 and 1913, an era without any worker protections, without any environmental protections, an era of institutionalized racial and ethnic segregation and discrimination, an era of great power politics, when the empires of the world decided what would happen to lesser nations. Trump wants all of North America. Put that together with Putin's territorial ambitions and aggression, coupled with Trump's excuses for Russia, China's desire for Taiwan and its interests in Africa, and it appears that's where we're heading again, or at least where Trump, Putin, and Xi want to head again. The other European nations, the members of the European Union and of NATO, have since reaffirmed their support for Ukraine, at least verbal support. I hope they match that with action. Now, I'm going to move on to the subject of parallels. From the beginning of this podcast, I have tried to show the links and parallels between the politics and warfare of the 1930s and 40s and the situation we live in today. I know there are those who will criticize such comparisons. I know that the geopolitical realities are very different. But there are parallels and similarities. And history can provide pointers to where the world is going. That's why we study history. I still see important parallels between the situation today for Ukraine and the Munich Conference of 1938. When Germany threatened to invade Czechoslovakia, claiming that there were areas where German people lived in Czechoslovakia and they were being oppressed, much as Russia has claimed that Russian speakers in Ukraine are being oppressed. In 1938, the great powers of the time, France and Great Britain, negotiated the fate of the victimized country, Czechoslovakia, with Germany, without any representation from Czechoslovakia itself. In 1939, Hitler and Stalin signed an agreement dividing Europe into respective spheres of influence. They divided Poland between them. Hitler was the first to betray the agreement when he ordered Operation Barbarossa in 1941. And in 2025, Americans are negotiating the future of Ukraine with the country that invaded it, Russia, and they're doing this without participation by any Ukrainians. Yes, there are differences. In 1938, Germany had not yet sent in the tanks. And here's the telling part. The leaders of Britain and France in 1938 were not supporters or fans or admirers of the German leader, Adolf Hitler. In 2025, Trump has expressed his admiration for Putin and clearly, through his actions, as I've mentioned, favors Putin over Zelensky. Now, there's one more parallel before I close, one that goes back much farther in time. During the Middle Ages, the Roman Emperor, most of the people in the West today refer to him as the Byzantine Emperor, the Roman Emperor would take occasionally an audience from a king, a khan, or a sultan, an acknowledged sovereign in their own country. When they visited the emperor in Constantinople, they had to show deference. They may have been kings, but they weren't emperors, and therefore not equals. They would have to wait to approach the emperor, but not too close. Then they would have to kneel and acknowledge their inferiority and give thanks for the audience. Sound familiar? The event on 28th February 2025 became hostile when President Zelensky asked Vice President Vance a question. What kind of diplomacy are you talking about, JD? And that's when JD accused President Zelensky of disrespect. I originally thought of saying the meeting went off the rails at that point. But I actually, now on further reflection, I don't think that's what happened. I think the whole blow-up was planned. There was no disrespect on Zelensky's part. He, to me, appeared professional and sad the whole time. What's more, Vance and Trump's accusations of disrespect did not proceed logically from Zelensky's question. It's not disrespectful to ask a question. In fact, Trump's ire rose only after Zelensky mentioned the ocean between Russia and the U.S. Apparently, Trump thought it implied weakness. I think the Trump administration never intended to make a deal with Ukraine. I read the leaked text of the initial agreement for the development of critical minerals in Ukraine, the document that supposedly Zelensky was coming to Washington to sign. Reading it, I didn't see anything in it for Ukraine. It was all for the U.S. gets this and that, but there's nothing about what Ukraine gets. There's nothing in there about guaranteeing Ukrainian sovereignty and territorial integrity. So what I take from that is that Trump and his administration never intended and never will guarantee Ukrainian sovereignty. I am truly fearful for the future of Ukraine, of Europe, of Canada, of democracy. I know this is not what you expected from Beyond Barbarossa, but I've always believed that if one has a platform with some kind of outlook on an issue of life and death, one has a responsibility to redress it. And as I said, parallels, similarities, and links between the 1940s and the current day have been regular themes of this podcast. And those will impact what we experience now. I plan to keep exploring those parallels and links. And I'm optimistic about having a special guest to discuss those ideas soon. Speaking of upcoming episodes, soon you'll hear David Sumner of the Europe at War podcast on this one. And you hopefully will hear me on his. So thank you for listening to this special episode of Beyond Barbarossa. And I apologize to my Patreon supporters for not bringing this one out earlier for you. But, well, this situation just happened. Don't worry, though. The next episode will return to the regular subject of the Eastern Front of the Second World War. Since you've made it this far without clicking off in anger, please remember to hit that follow button if you haven't already. Do you have a response, comment, question, anything to say? I'd love to hear from you. All you have to do is send an email to scott@beyondbarbarossa.ca, or you can contact me through the Facebook Beyond Barbarossa page. Until next episode, keep your paddles in the water. Vive l'Ukraine e slava Ukraina. And Canada will never be the 51st of the United States of America.